Blog Talk Radio. Greetings, Hotep. Welcome to the Care to Read Room. You have your Omega 7 Live coming to you straight from my living room. So how is everyone doing this evening? I hope you're fair to Midland. I'm just fine. And to those newcomers, I want to say welcome. And to my old friends, what's up? What's the news? Habari Ghani. Welcome into my humble home. Take a seat and relax. This month's segment is If Financial Illiteracy is the Solution to College-Bound Students. Should students go and get an understanding of their financial literacy before going off to college, or should they experience it once they get in college? That's what we're going to be talking about this month on the segment of Consumer Family Science. We're going to also be partnering with Junior Achievement because their materials are so fantastic to meet the requirement for economic prosperity, understanding how our students use economic status in elementary school as well as middle school and high school. They start as early as kindergarten. How do they budget their money? How do they take their lunch money and pay for the things they need rather than buying the things they want? Sometimes their mother gives them their money in one lump sum. They have to make a decision if eating is a priority in the cafeteria. You don't want to put that kind of responsibility on a kindergartner. You want to help that kindergartner understand that it is prosperous to feed the mind as well as the body, and to keep the mind fed will allow the body to hold up. So take your kindergartners aside and explain to them that there's four quarters in a dollar, and explain to them how to fraction that money off to investigate it and find out how to use it to the fullest and make that dollar scream. That's what we're talking about. Make that dollar scream until you get the benefit of it. I saw my son, my oldest son, take small fractions of money and stretch that money triple times around in college. When we were setting up his allowance and we fractioned that money off, he had already figured out which coupons he was going to use for which burgers he was going to eat that week and which extracurricular activity he was going to. Mothers, you want to teach your children well before they leave to go off to college, because you don't want them calling you every week telling you, hey, guess what? I'm broke. I need money for the weekend. The weekend is coming, Mom. I got to be able to go out and sport my new haircut and be able to go roller skating too. And then we're going bowling. And after that, we're going to have a dance on the ballroom. And we might even go out on the boat. It takes money to live a lifestyle. You and I both know that. And if they want to still be in the in crowd, they got to demonstrate that they are economically savvy with their money. Because you don't want to fall short of money when it's your turn to put up for the money and to buy groceries when you're living in the dorms together or perhaps an apartment. You want to make sure your children are financially literate instead of illiterate when they go off to college. They don't know how to manage large sums of money. They're buying unnecessary things that they don't need. They're calling you every week talking about, Mom, put the money on the card. Go to the debit machine, the ATM machine. They say we broke. You got to put something on the card. How many times have you heard that? How many times have you heard that? Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen. You probably heard it more than once. And you're going to continue to hear it until you sit down with your child and explain to that child the affairs of money and how money can get away from you if you don't watch it and how you have got to plan in advance how you're going to keep that filthy lucre circulating in your pocketbook. So why don't you come on in my living room? Can I come into your bedroom? Can I sit down in your living room? I'm talking square biz here. You've got to get your children set up and squared away for managing their money. And, Mama, if you still letting little Johnny go to the bank and help you cash your check and figure out which bills you got to pay, there's nothing wrong with that. But you got to sit down and take the lead and show little Johnny that you might not made it past a grade, but you can compute and multiply, add and subtract. And if you need that extra help, go ahead on and take that arithmetic class and sharpen up on your skills so you don't let your child lead the household financial endeavor. And then they tell you, my mama didn't know nothing. Well, why you expect me to know something? I got my learning from her. Mama, take the lead. And if need be, if Dad comes around and he's sharp with numbers, let him sit you down and show you how to calculate the money for the groceries and the rent and NIPSCO and the water bill. So everything is paid at one time. And you don't have to wonder at the end of the month which one of the bills to pay. And you're begging from Peter to pay Paul. Ladies and gentlemen, this is on a serious note. Our country is perishing economically. Excuse me. I'm not saying that lower socioeconomic people or poor people caused this major catastrophe. What I am saying is that rich people wanting more and more and getting cuts on every hand with their tax break primarily has gotten us into this circumstance. It's the rich people that keep getting rich and the poor people that keep having to pay more taxes. So Obama said that we wouldn't have to pay taxes. At least that's what he said to the lower socioeconomic people. But now they're telling me they're monitoring over 7 of the richest people in the world to see what tax bracket they fall in. And they're finding out they fall in an average common person like you and I tax bracket when they're making over millions of dollars a year. Unfortunately, we are not corporations, and they're getting all the tax breaks under the corporation. Why not become a corporation and incorporate your name and whatever business you're doing out of your home? What are the benefits of becoming incorporated, and how do you teach your child which incorporation to aspire? An LLC, C-Corp, or are they looking to get an S-Corp? Are they selling stocks? Do you have any commodities or products to sell where you can sell stocks? You need to look into all these opportunities and find out how the middleman or lower socioeconomic economic person can pull himself up by the bootstraps. They say that if we don't get some wealth within the next year, we're going to be permanent underclass. But I don't believe that, because we serve a spirit and not a man. We serve a God who has abundance. And because abundance is within our reach and we have the Zoe life and God is our Father, he owns the earth and they that dwell therein and the mountain on the hill and the cattle. You've got to be able to visualize the fact that you have abundance. You've got to be able to visualize that your Father who lives in you has allowed you to live through his eyes and through his life. If you believe and practice the visualization of what you see is only an illusion, you can come to grips with being rich because your Father is rich, not because you own monetary things and filthy lucre, because you serve an entity that is bountiful, and so bountiful he cannot sub anything. Everything that dwells in the earth is his, and you are one of his legacies where you share in his abundance. You must believe that today, people. You cannot sub anything or get below it. It is all a figment of your imagination. If there is abundance in God and perfectness in God and balance in God and the all in all is in God and you're in God, it makes you a God and having access to all of his resources. Why don't you take advantage of his resources? Why don't you be a good steward and tap in? I'm going to take you over to the talking cure. And I want to teach you how to tap into that energy spirit. And as you tap into that, carry it over in your household and continue to tap in. And you will never be poor in your spirit. And you will always have money and meat in your house. Just when you look like you're at your weakest point and the check hasn't come, look high, brothers and sisters. The check has already been in the spirit. Call it to you. Direct those forces of energy to you. You are made up of atoms and energy. Your vibrational frequencies determine how rich you'll be. I want to rear up your frequencies, and I want to get your vibrations moving so whatever it is you need to draw to you, you can do it in the spirit as you go into the subconscious mind. And when you come out of that subconscious mind, you will see it begin to manifest in the natural. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. Let's go to station identification. We're taking you over to the area where we're going to slip into the gap where the talking cure is going to remind you of whose you are and who you believe in. I say, whose report do you believe? Are you rich in your spirit? Are you poor beyond measures? You determine that. Keep your frequency vibrations whirled up. I'll be right back at you in the atmosphere after I borrow your airways temporarily. I will give them back to you in rich. Stay tuned as we get ready to go to station identification. Let me get BJ out here because I need him and I got my fare. We want to go down the road a piece and he's going to show me what it is we need to do to get that vibration roaring up in this place today. BJ, I need you to come on down here now. I'm waiting to go down to take the frequency level that we need to bring us where we ought to be. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. Take two. We're going to station identification. BJ, come on down here. That's okay. We got Nettie. We'll talk with Nettie today. Stay tuned for station identification. Well, they want to start early, but we got it going on. Hold on for a minute. Is BJ here? Come on, BJ. Come on, BJ. Oh, here he is. BJ, ready to go down that road a piece. Come on, BJ. It looks like to me they want to. Come on, BJ. I knew this was coming. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're back and we're at you in the atmosphere. We want to welcome each and every one of you. Our time has been slightly a little bit later than normal. We still want to welcome you here to the Care to Read Room. And thank you for joining us this evening. And to all my Twitterers who have been following me, I want to thank you so much. And I want to let you know that OMI is setting up an opportunity to visit and frequent other rooms. And that's what I've been doing. And there's a number of people I want to follow and I want to stay in contact with. And I hope you're getting my messages that I'm leaving you. And shortly and indirectly, I will be following some people that I think I would like to get to know better. Now, if you haven't gotten a message from me, it's not because I don't love you. It's because I'm so busy. But I still think of each and every one of you each time I view your room and frequent your room. And I want you to know that I will be back out there soliciting for people I want to follow. And I want you to know that this segment of the Care to Read Room, you can participate in and you can be a part of. I want you to be ready now and stand to your feet because we're now ready to defeat this thing. How many of you believe that you are rich in your spirit? And how many of you believe that you've already accomplished what it is you're trying to accomplish? You are living only an illusion. This is not mind over matter. There is no matter, so it doesn't mind. It's only pure spirit and frequency. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Many times you have believed that it is your mind that's guiding you, that has the capability of soaring. Do you not know you could exist and function with a fraction of your brain? Meaning that it is not only your brain that's the substance that's leading you, it is pure spirit. That's why I'm telling you to take advantage of this time to learn about pure spirit. Pure spirit. How many of you can say that with me? Pure spirit. Now, as you learn about spirit and the benefit of spirit, you will see that spirit is what's going to manifest in your life. You have got to pick it up with your spirit and understand that as we begin to understand spirit, we will suppress flesh and mind, and we will have nothing but the spirit to lead. Spirit reminds us of all things. There is no way that you can be without an understanding. There is no way that you can exist without spirit guiding you. Please understand me, ladies and gentlemen. The things that I do with you to help you get in the spirit are very important. Stand to your feet. As we pour the libation to the east, we say Ashe. As we pour the libation to the west, we say Ashe. We pour libation to the north and say Ashe. We pour libations to the south and say Ashe. We pour a glass of water for my father's spirit and say, may this quench your thirst, Father. We pour a glass of water for my mother's spirit and say, mother, drink well. Water knows no enemy. You're neutral here on this ground. As we light a candle for our mother spirit, we say Ashe. As we light a candle for our Father Spirit, we say, Ashe. We invite those spirits here today. We know that it's their shoulders, and they are the sum total of why we came. We climb over their shoulders and ask them if we can stand out front. Ladies and gentlemen, do this likewise on a day-to-day basis. Invite the frequency and the vapors of the spirit into your home. You are trying to kill the old man. Beat down his flesh. Deny his flesh every day. Flesh is wicked, desperately wicked. And this heart of ours, who can know it? We are trying to transcend from flesh and blood into spirit. I am not your charismatic preacher. The scriptures that you might want to hear, what has already taken care of the ceremony in the church has already been done. I am here to press your way on to spirit so that you can get in the spirit and stay in the spirit, and you won't be confused by the lust of the flesh. That's why the lust of the flesh will confuse you and condemn you. As you press on to spirit, your mighty vessels will be able to see things that be not and call things that have not yet happened. You'll be able to look into your loved ones' lives, and those of you who are close to each other, you will be able to see in their lives too. Don't ask me what I see for your future. You've got to be able to clairvoyantly see into your own lives. And you do that by staying in the spirit. And as I guide you with the spirit, all truths will come through the spirit. Nothing hid can be hidden from the spirit. The spirit brings all truth to bear. Concentrate with me as I ask you to allow yourself to vibrate your frequencies and synchronize your vital signs with mine, taking deep breaths in and out to the point of allowing yourself to go into the subconscious world. And as you go into the subconscious world, know that the spirits are level at the cross and they will meet you there. Whatever it is in your household, in your home, in your continent that you are trying to accomplish, now accomplish that in the subconscious underworld. Work it out in the spirit. So when you emerge up out of the subconscious world, you will begin to see that thing manifest in the natural. What you see in the natural is not always so, but whatever you reveal in the spirit realm will come to pass in the natural. Take yourself on that journey or that voyage on a daily basis as you begin to work out your situation while in the spirit realm. Ladies and gentlemen, let your frequency levels vibrate. Let the vibration of your ninth ether in your hair frequency and let it correspond to your higher self, to the Godhead, and let it speak to the Godhead as they begin to communicate, and your ninth ether of your hair will carry new thoughts, new directions for you as you begin to understand how you commune with spirit. You will see your solution. Your solution will be at hand. Let's bow our heads to call on the forces to be. Father God, we ask you to open up the airways so frequency levels will be able to vibrate. We ask you to receive our offering today as we take time out of our busy schedules, not to be charismatic, but to come to you in the best way we know how. Come to you humbly, Father, that you will be the one that exalt us and new time. Help us to understand that there's no good thing about this flesh, neither are we to take any respect in this flesh, but to bring it up under subjection and to allow spirit to reign and to show us things that are unseen. Father God, we pray that every family represented here today will begin to understand spirit and the benefit of going into spirit. They may not call it High John the Conqueror or voodoo, or they may not call it witchcraft, but they will see you have ordained that we sit and sup with you and commune. Help us to understand that God has ordained that we are to remind him of what his promises are to us. We are to decree what it is that God has promised us. We are to call back into subjection our money. I call back thousands of dollars down to the third generation in my family. I call back lost monies that might be sitting in someone else's safe. I call back funds that are being held up or being maliciously hidden. I call back treasure chests that are beneath the sea. I call back finances and funds that I can share with others that I might be able to lend and not borrow. I call those finances back into being this day, that phones will ring tomorrow, that institutions will call me tomorrow, and they will call me to pick up enormous checks, and that mailboxes will be jammed with debits to my account, credits to my account, and not debits. I call back monies that have been lost at sea. I call back those deposits that my ancestors have made before me. I call them back, Father, to do the work that we want to do. You must circulate the filthy lucre in my hands. I decree it, and I'm calling you to watch over your word to perfect it. There is none of us that are broke and poor. We're only broke in our spirit. All that you own belongs to us. We're an heir of your throne. No more of this talk about being poor. No more of this confusion about not having. We must build our institution. We must govern ourselves. We cannot fall lower than a refugee by having children lead us in the courtrooms. Father, remove these children from the courtroom. Who do they think they are going to lead one of the oldest people in the world? Give us our proper position in the court of law. Open these prison cells. Release those in bondage who have been held falsely. Every child to the sound of my voice will be released out of prisons all over the world who are falsely charged. And these judges will be dumbfounded as to what God is doing. They will be baffled and lost in their spirit and confused. Father, bring about a confusion over this nonsense so that you can take over the reign of these sovereign institutions called judges and judiciary system. Do a mighty work today and change the vibration and the frequency so you will come quickly, Lord Jesus. Even so, I say come quickly. Let the Jesus rise up. Yet we know you won't part the sky and come out. But the Jesus we're looking for and the Elijah that we're setting a table for is within us. We are the Jesus and the only God that we can manifest today. Manifest to God in each and every one of you and decree what it is that God has told you you have ownership of. Take back your faith. Take back your finances. There is no economic crisis. Only the ones that you can't see in the spirit. You are a sovereign nation. Now stand and be who God says you are. You are God's little children, and ye have overcome them. There is only but one essence, and you fit that essence. There is no disharmony in you. All things are balanced and perfect in God. You are one with God. So ye are perfect, little children. Do not dismay, for God has overtaken them. If you are being molested, and if you are being bullied, or if you are being incarcerated, falsely charged, they will have to open arms and forgive you and repent of their ill-propped behavior. And the judges who have been set to rule, who are crooked in their ways, Father, you will sling them as far as to the west as to the east to remove them from their responsibility. Because they have failed you, Father, and they have not been righteous in all their doings. And we decree righteousness, righteousness, righteousness will reign on this earth. We decree it, and we denounce those falsely who decree that they're judges and lawyers who are corrupted. You're a liar, and the truth ain't in you. And God is ready to turn things around and upside down. He will do that for his people. He said he would even cross and part the very sky to come down here and see about his people who he has made and not created. The ones that he's called from his being, he has made a people that can rule. That people has become stiff-necked. Unstiffen your neck, African people. You're about to rule again. Straighten up your back and don't prostrate yourself. God has need of your donkey. Come forth and be a natural man ready to lead, as God has promised you that you will be the first and you will be the last, and the last shall be first. Thus saith the Lord. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for going with me to the talking care room. Thank you so much, and may you be blessed richly and continue to do as I do, call forth the Spirit. Ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to go into our session on attorney at law. And if you would just bear with me, we are going to be going into that session in a moment here, and I will be bringing you into that section. Our attorney did call today and indicated that he was in court and that he wanted to be a part of this show. However, we started a half an hour late, and he'll be coming back. Don't worry, he'll be a part of the show, and we will get him in here to talk about what it is he needs to. Stay tuned for Station Identity.
I've known rivers. I've known rivers ancient as the world and older than the flow of human blood in human veins. My soul has grown deep like the rivers. I bathed in the Euphrates when dawns were young. I built my hut near the Congo, and it lulled me to sleep. I looked upon the Nile and raised the pyramids above it. I heard the singing of the Mississippi when Abe Lincoln went down to New Orleans, and I've seen its muddy bosom turn all golden in the sunset. I've known rivers. Ancient, dusky rivers. My soul has grown deep like the rivers.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going right into our attorney at law, and I will be discussing paralegal issues for you in the absence of our attorneys. Just bear with us, and we will have those gentlemen here to talk to you extensively and take Q&A. Our topic today is to talk to you about understanding family law and making sure that every family has an attorney or at least someone to represent them. Now, mothers and fathers, if you have not found someone that you can obtain as your family attorney, I suggest you call in and inquire about an attorney that could possibly take your cases. I know several of them and good attorneys that could assist you. I did give some of their names on the last program, but I am going to give you their names if you would call me offline. I don't have the time to call their names out, but at this point, wherever you are, stop in your tracks. If you do not have any attorneys on your repertoire, and you are working and honestly doing fairly well, You cannot afford to be without representation. And please, mothers, don't tell your sons and daughters to pick up the power. Don't tell them to pick up the public defender. And do not make the mistake of thinking that the public defender is on your side. I want you to understand that the state, the DA, can in fact bring charges against you. Now, you must also know that your situation could be so unique and you need to have proper representation. I want the person that is interrupting my airways to stop. This is a professional show, and I expect Blog Talk to make sure that we are running a professional program. All these noises and other people coming in, I decree and command them to stop breaking through. Now, I'd like to tell you also, no one wants you to know about the law. You're supposed to run to the public defender and say, here I am, I need your help. It's a facade, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, they take cases, and yes, they are hired by the state. It's a conflict of interest. If all they're designed to do is take a plea bargain, you are still getting a case, and you are still being charged with something. Now, I want you to understand, to those of you who never had charges against yourself, why allow somebody to put a charge on you because you're thinking you're taking the lesser of two evils? You must insist that there be an investigation and a cross-examining so that you can have trial law and have a speedy trial within 48 hours, or at least be charged with something within 48 hours. Mothers, you're doing your family a disservice if you think that prepaid legal is having some protection. It's nothing wrong with having your attorney in your portfolio and pay him for what service or what service she offers. It is nothing wrong with that. Now, if you're not going to do that, I did run a segment on pro se where you represent yourself. But mothers, you've got to be ready to go back and read some statutes and case laws and procedures so you are acting as the attorney for yourself or your sons and daughters are. And if they're not equipped to do that, do not put them in that awkward position. They're not a member of the bar. And if they're not an astute reader, they might miss something or miss a filing date. That is still no excuse for the letter of the law. Now, let me talk to you, mothers, to tell you why this is a good investment. Because prepaid legal is going to tell you you get one phone call and one get-out-of-jail ticket, and that's it. And you're still paying for the year. Why not go ahead and obtain an attorney, have dinner with that attorney, get to know their specialties, talk to them, so you've made an impression and you've made yourself accustomed and acquainted with that attorney prior to having using him or her. I want you to understand we're living in perilous times now. All institutions are looking to see where they can gain funds, and the bank is broke. And if you could come to the court and pay a ticket or a bond, you are helping to get money circulated again. You don't want to break any crimes. You don't want to do anything that will cause you to have to go to court. So when you have your attorney, in the event that you're pleading that you're innocent, he can fight and cross-examine on behalf of you. Now, some mothers are emptying out their bank account and mortgaging their houses and going broke. But you don't have to. You can stand with John or Sally and say, mothers behind you, don't persecute your children. And don't become enemies of your children, because now that you got to spend some money, stand with them. Go to court with them. Don't let them go alone. And even if they say, Mom and Dad, I got this, you go in that courtroom and make sure procedures are done in consistent order. And by all means, when you get this attorney, get you a public accountant to go with that. You're building an institution. And if Mom and Dad, if you're making good filthy lucre, $40,000, $50,000, take some of that money and spend it wisely. You've got to protect your nation. You've got to protect your name and your children while they are busy developing. You've got to make sure that you see that young boy to graduation of high school and beyond the age of 25. Do you not know that the new bald eagle is a black male? And that they are hoping that they don't transpire to the age of 25. God is on your side, people. And if one of your children are being sought after, incarcerated, then go into the spirit. Tell God about it. God will release that person in the spirit. They will cause them to slip through the hands of the justice system if they are wrong. God has the final say over the jury and judge. Man has not become into his own where he can properly chasten and chastise and play God. Now, if you say you love Jesus and you say you know God, now is the time to pick him up a little bit tightly and speak to him like you know him. But don't go on with this madness telling people about how many children you got locked up and incarcerated, and you working in an affluent job, and you didn't use none of that filthy lucre to purchase an attorney for your child? What kind of mother will see their children suffer in a penal institution that won't allow their money, their good-earned money, to help their child? And then I hear them say, I'm throwing good money to bad. What will happen to the money you thought you had will leave you. You must preserve your children because your children are an extension of you. You must understand that you will decrease, but your children must increase. Legal law is not so hard. Sit down with the lawyer and ask them to show you statutes. And read along with them. You read every doggone thing else as an administrator, and you're the top of your class at work. Pick up that law book and read it too. And understand what your daughter or son is being charged with. And understand the recourses. Yes, the professionals will take care of this. But understand why you're paying that lawyer and what you're paying him to do and what options they have to offer you. Don't let them just offer you a plea bargain. If that son or daughter is innocent, tell them you want to go to trial law. You want him to work for his money, and you want her to work for her money, and you want her, your children, to be vindicated. You got so many people that are sold out in the system, who don't want to rattle the cage or bring any objection in the court of law. They just want to keep writing out deals. It's easier that way, but yet young brothers and sisters are getting their records scarred, and mothers are walking away shamefully saying, "There was nothing I can do." Yes, there is something you can do. You can make those attorneys go all the way for a trial law so that their children will have an opportunity to be vindicated. Now, lawyers go to school and they train. I trained with some lawyers in paralegal school. They told me of the difficulties they had in law school, so they decided to become a paralegal. When I saw some of them struggling in the paralegal school, I realized that everybody's not suited for law. It takes a very special kind of person to search the hidden law and to find those prima facie cases and case laws and to try somebody to the point of being able to read that person. If you are a priestess and you have capabilities of seeing the truth and getting to the truth, you would make a good attorney and trial lawyer because you can read into the future if these people are lying or not. Why? Because as a priestess, you're given that skill and that gift. You are a representative of the legal system and of the herbology and pathology and naturopathic. You become a doctor and a judge and jury because of the things you must learn as becoming a priest or priestess. When you find, mothers, that you see through some of the lies and you want to speak out on behalf of your son and daughter, and yet you've hired this attorney to represent you, and you're just not feeling what offer he's making to John or Sue, speak up. Tell them no deal. Tell them no deal. They didn't come here with a scarred record, and they will not leave with one. We will fight this thing in court. Know that your children have a right to bring about investigation. They have to launch it, though, mothers and father. You cannot launch it. Not a parent unless that child is underage. Any child over 22 must launch his own investigation or have his attorney launch it. Make these old attorneys do what they're supposed to do. Don't let them come to you with a half-baked story. Trouble their waters if you have to. And tell them you're going to go and do some reading yourself. Don't let them tell you that you don't understand the statutes. The statutes are made available where you can read them to see what it says. I want you to be informed parents. And youngsters, sit down a minute. When your mom and dad tell you something about probation, don't go telling them it don't work like that. Take out the instructions and read it and know what it is that your probation officer told you to do and do what she's told you to do. Don't play no games thinking this is an informal game and I don't have to comply. The less rope you have, the more you have to hang yourself with. Now, I'm telling you, you've got to help your family. When you get in these situations and you're out by yourself and something is done wrong to you, you must inform your parents of it. Don't go at it alone by yourself, holding your chin up, saying, I can do this alone. This is a time when your family must stand with you, young men and women. This is a time when they want to help vindicate you. Yes, you can work to take care of the probation money, but right now you run everything by your mother and your father before you sign any plea agreement. Now, I'm telling you, parents, some of your children are not all wrong. Some of your children need vindicating, and some of your children need fair treatment, and some of your children need to have their cases vindicated properly by a trial lawyer. Sometimes we talk about the all-American dream. All we ever wanted to do was to be free. We thought when we got the yoke from off our neck and thought we had walked into freedom, it's still a high-tech lynching going on. But we can't seem to see it. Why? If you are free today and tomorrow you have a potential to be molested, you've got to get a handle of this. We've got to investigate the laws that hold us in bondage. We've got to investigate whether or not laws are being carried out appropriately. And we certainly got to write our congressmen about any inconsistency or inadequacy that we see in the legislature. Now, we got to understand state DA and state bringing indictments to revoke probation. What probable cause would they have for doing that if the probation officer is content with the status of his probation? And do they have the right to invoke a statute saying that they're bringing about charges? And under what degree and what statute would give them the right to do this? And under what degree of what it is that they would be bringing this invoking? You've got to read, parents, and you've got to know what your rights are. And as a paralegal and an advocate, I cannot be your attorney. I am not a member of the bar. I'm only one who reads material. And I suggest you read materials too, even though you obtain your attorney. Read right along with them in case there's an oversight and they miss something. But by all means, ascertain you a good attorney. And if you haven't done it yet, you are walking around unprotected, like unsafe sex. You must guard yourself and protect your family. You must have, if you get a lawyer to help you do a closing of a house, how much more important are your children than a doggone house? A couple of $100 a month can detain you an attorney and make him or her available to you when you need him. You got to get safe and smart. And you've got to be accountable for these prison cells that are maxing out. Do you not know all the money that we're paying for these prisoners to go in jail under false charges? Taxpayers have to pay for that. These people can be working or going to college, but yet we're paying for their food and their housing in these prisons. Some of them can be let out on their own cognizance, and they are let out periodically. We don't know how the law system works. Maybe mom and dad needs to take a field trip to the legal system and walk through and find out what the procedures are. No, I'm not kidding. I'm dead serious. Because apparently we got our mind on something else and think that somebody's protecting and covering us. No, they're not. And you need to know what goes on in these courtrooms and the procedure of the legislature system and the judicial system. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to bring our segment to a close. We're going to go right into our next segment, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to thank you so much for being a part of that segment, because we know that the more knowledge we have, the better. And we already know about knowledge is power. We know that already. And we are constantly seeking out better ways of protecting ourselves, better ways of showing our children how to do it right. So stay tuned. We'll be back at you tomorrow is Thursday, so we'll be with you on Friday on that topic. But right now, we're going right into Always Sisters, Always Friends. Stay tuned.
News for you, I'm something. hope
you think that you're something too.
Welcome. You're in the room of Always Sisters, Always Friends, and you got your Omega 7 live here today, along with my co-host, Miss Harvey, and we'll be talking about the subject of friendships. How many childhood friendships are still in your life, and how many of those childhood friendships have gone through something with you? And can you name at least two or three on your hand? And what are the significant things and characters you found that your longtime friends had? And how can you determine if a friend is closely getting close to you for all the wrong reasons? And do you have people around you that profess to be your friends but are truly enemies? Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back at you in the atmosphere to talk about those childhood friendships. Let me say hello to Miss Harvey. Hello, Mrs. Harvey.
Hello, how are you?
I'm just fine, thank you.
Very good, very good. Interested in your in what you're talking about today.
Thank you, Mrs. Harvey. We'll be right back at you in the atmosphere. We're going to station identification.
I went to Columbia University in New York City for a year. I didn't like Columbia very well. A big university in the very heart of a big city, it didn't seem to me to have what I thought was a feeling of college life or campus life. And then, at that time, there was prejudice at Columbia. I had difficulty getting a room in the dormitory as a Negro student. And then, being interested in writing, I wanted to become a member of the staff of the Columbia College newspaper, The Spectator. And so I tried out for it. You had to go through sort of preliminary test and show some ability. And do you know what they assigned me to? Me, a Negro student, they assigned me to society and fraternity news. And they knew very well that I had no access to most of the fraternity houses or dances that the white students went to. And so I was unsuccessful in making the staff of the Spectator. My father had wanted me to become a mining engineer. By that time, I'd made up my mind that I'd like to be a writer. We didn't agree on objectives. So at the end of the year, I wrote my father in Mexico City and told him that I had decided to try to be a writer. And if he didn't approve of my plans, he needn't send me any more money. Well, he didn't send me any more money. I found myself in New York City with only $13 at the end of my college year. And that is what I started out in life on. Ever since that time, I've been making my own living, and with this $13, I went down to Harlem, got a room, and began to look for a job.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so very much for the information about Columbia College. Children today now go into college and find that there is a lot of racism, and sometimes it's a direct route into the penal institution. I don't know how many of you family members out there are monitoring your colleges and seeing what is going on there in the Greek fraternities. But I do know that a lot of Greek fraternities are not acceptable on the college campus. And during our family life segment, we will be focusing in on the college campus and what it's like for our children who go to these college campuses. Right now, we're going to take you right back into Always Sisters, Always Friends. And our topic for today is our childhood friends, those childhood friends who are still in our life today. What were some of the significant characteristics about those people? And why did we keep them close and near and dear to us? And who are those friends that are proposing to be friends who have professed to be our friends, but yet we know them to be enemies? I like to say that I have a lot of childhood friends in my life. The majority of my real good friends have been my childhood friends. And I can think of one particular young lady in my repertoire that started out being my best friend in elementary school, all the way to college, and we became roommates. And we're still the best of friends, but now our lives have gone separate ways, and we have different outlooks on the type of goal we have for our family. She has no children, and I have two children. However, we had a prominent interest in each other in elementary school. We both were potential seamstresses, and we liked to design and make our own clothes. We had an interest. We carried the interest right over into college, and she being the more better seamstress, she sat down and gave me some tips and tidbits on sewing, and I became a master tailor like she did. And we then would both had a presence in the community of sporting our clothes with our own name brand. So we kept that interest all the way till we both graduated. Well, I graduated. Her husband came and asked her to leave school. She never got to finish college. We remained friends even after we got out. I got out of college, and we were the best of friends. I could always count on her to come visit me all over the world where I lived, all the way down to going to Minnesota, to Wisconsin, but she didn't somehow get a chance to come to Germany where I was stationed. But she saw to it that she always checked on me and called me. And we kept that friendship because I led her to Christ and talked to her about her lifestyle and the importance of being connected to God. She didn't know anything about a life with God or a personal relationship with God. After leading her to Christ, she decided to join church, and she wanted me to see what she was doing in the church. So one of my first visits back in the state was to go visit her at church. There she had found a deacon man who was proposing to marry her. Me knowing that she never went after those guys who were involved in the church, and I thought it was unusual, but nevertheless, it was good for her because she had now found Christ and her life was going to be different. But boring, I thought, very boring. This deacon was so boring that we couldn't do the things that we used to do, like go out and have fun dancing, and to dress for the occasion. He was rather stuffy. However, she showed him that we had to be in her life. So she drugged him all over the place to be with my husband and I. She drugged him back and forth so I could see he was very, very bored with us because we weren't those church-going people who were advancing themselves into the kingdom of God. However, he didn't know I was an evangelist. But I had been an evangelist so long that I had learned how to be a person and not wear my cloth on the end of my shirt sleeve. I knew how to be a person and not always put my title up front so that people could be overbearing with me as an evangelist. So some thought I was a cool evangelist because I was coming and down to earth, but nevertheless, he was going out front so he can sing with his brothers, and I found him to be very stuffy and overbearing. So I drew back on my best friend, and I stopped visiting her at home except for when she called me to her home for the dinner parties. I met her mainly at her place of employment. As a matter of fact, I just visited her a week ago at her place of employment. We could always make each other laugh to the point where we were all tears. And that was a lightheartedness I liked about our relationship. We could always find a reason to laugh, and something that would normally throw a person off, we could take it to heart and see the good in it. This was a good relationship for me. This was a very good relationship for me because I saw her through times when her mother made her transition, her brother made his transition, and we were the best of friends. And even her sisters knew it. Have you seen Bernie? Have you been by to visit Bernie? And they would always make sure that they would connect us back together. There was something there, there was a magnitude that each one of us needed in each other's life. And to this day, everyone still knows she's my best friend. And my second best friend was Alice. Alice and I adopted each other on the job. Alice didn't drive well. I was sort of like a nurturing mother to Alice because she was several years older than me. I was always gravitated to older women older than me. It's probably because my sisters were always mentored. Now, I'm going to stop for a sec and get my mentoring sister in here to get her input about girlfriends that have been in her life for a long time. And who can she remember has been her childhood friend up until now? Stay tuned. Mrs. Harvey, you're in the atmosphere. Can you tell us who your childhood friend was? And are you still friends with any of your old friends?
Yes. Excuse me. My childhood friend was Mildred. Mildred and I kind of grew up together. We went to school together. And we had friendship that was closer than most sisters have now. And my relationship with her was very strong. I loved her, and I felt she loved me. And Mildred, when she went off to college, I didn't go off to college. Mildred would write me and all the time, and I would write her. And when she came home from college, she came home because she had gotten married, and she didn't want to tell her mom that she had gotten married, but she told me. And finally, we sit down to talk, and we finally come to the decision that we would go tell her mom. And we told her mom, and that brought us closer together, her mom and her and I.
Very good. You know, Mrs. Harvey, sometimes we can have people around us that call themselves our friend, and they tell everybody, oh, that's my best friend. And you in your mind are thinking that I've never told her that we're best friends. I only tolerate her. She bugs me a lot. And I can't seem to get away from her. Every time I look up, she wants to be a part of my life. So what is it that you can do to tell these so-called friends you're not my best friend? And really, I don't appreciate you being around me all the time telling everyone you're my best friend. How do you do that? And how do you say that without making a person feel inadequate? And can she possibly be an enemy, someone that could possibly hurt you? And what happens when one of your so-called friends really hurts you and you decide to break off the friendship, but they won't stop coming around you? And you do everything in your power to try to let them down easy, but they know in their heart that they have hurt you, but yet they throw you this big party and tell everyone, she's my best friend, and I'm going to show her that I'm still her best friend. Now, this big party is thrown for you, yet you know you've hurt this person. And everybody around is saying, my God, look at all the aesthetics and all the things she did for you. Boy, she must really love you. It's a facade, and you have to be able to see through it. Go ahead and go to the party and occasionally smile as if you're happy. But when you get to the front of the room to blow out the candles and make the announcement, make sure you set the record straight and say, we've had troubled times in the past. Yet my heart will allow me to forgive him or her, but I will never forget, lest I be a fool again to fall into the trap. Sometimes, mothers, you have to teach your sons and daughters this. Don't let everybody be your friend, and don't let everybody call themselves your friend. Be very particular about who you choose to be in your space. It's okay to be polite, but don't be so doggone polite that you let this person weasel their way back into your life. If they're toxic and bad chemistry and have led you the wrong direction, how can one or two walk together unless they both agree? If you find this person is a negative image in your life, cut off the relationship and let them know that they no longer can share space in your life. It's okay. You're not being rude, being honest, and you're saving yourself from a life or a long time suffering. Some people stay in toxic relationship with friends that know they have no business being with, who lead them down destruction. And then when they look back over their life, they look at the common denominator of that person always being around when destruction occurs. But they can't see. They're blinded. It takes another girlfriend or boyfriend to see into that situation and say, but Sherelle, you should have seen it coming. Didn't you know from the past experience what this girl was capable of? But you're still blinded because you figure people change. People don't actually change. And a leopard doesn't change his stripes. So in essence, you have a person with low character or low morals. You can't appeal to their best interest. They can't hear you. So the best thing you can do is exit out of that relationship. It's okay. During the time when you were growing up and you were at the stage of tolerance, after you become more mature, your tolerance level is not as strong as it used to be. You just don't have the tolerance for it any longer. And you've given up childhood things. When I was a child, I thought as a child. Now that I'm grown, more mature, I put away the things of a child. And you have to make it plain and clear. Maturity is very inevitable, and if you stay old enough, you will see maturity come. But for those who are in a permanent fix of being immature and slow to grow, you have to adventure out of that relationship and go on and continue to process and grow, lest you become a stowaway. Now, what about family members who have bad character, and their reputation has preceded themselves as being negative, but yet you love that family member, and every now and then they want to ride around in a car with you for old time's sake, and they want you to take them out to sport a dance or shopping, and you got to be seen with that person who has bad character. That's your relative. What do you say to your relative? How do you caution your relative to make a change in their life? Or how do you separate yourself from that relative? Let's go to the phone lines and ask Mrs. Harvey.
Well, you know what I would do?
Yes.
I would invite that person over to my house or to a restaurant to have dinner. And at that dinner, I would sit down and talk with them and let them know how I felt. And both of you should talk about it and put everything on top shelf and let it come out how you felt and how they felt. And then you would make a decision. Who was a friend? Are you a friend? And let them know that you want to know, do they really care about you? And if they did care about you, they will let you know right there.
Well, you know, Miss Harvey, more times than not, I have had relatives that had bad character. And after cautioning relatives so many times about their bad character, even though we grew up together, they would always say, remember, we grew up together. And you have to protect yourself and say, yet, but we also grew apart. I am not into the things that you're into, and you cannot get me with the fact that we grew up together and in the same house. So therefore, I have to set precedence with you and distance myself from you, and I can no longer watch you destroy yourself.
Well, you
and
know,
your character is not approving to me, and I have to release you and feed you with the long-handled spoon. What are you saying, Miss Robinson? Excuse me, Miss Harvey.
Became very honest with this person, and this person should be able to tell you just how they feel and just what the relationship is between you two.
Well, sometimes, Miss Harvey, the person wants to latch onto you because they really have bombed out with all their friends. They become lower in their morals and lower in their convictions to the point where they'll just about do anything. And they're feeling that because they have bombed out, that they don't care about themselves anymore. So they figure that you can help them to bump up their character a bit and move them up the notch in the community a bit. And they can skirt on your good name. But that can be contaminating and contagious. And you have to let them know that I can't take you out in the general public if I know that you still have some inadequate characters that you need to correct. For example, a cousin member of yours is dating a married man. And you know this. And you caution your cousin you don't want to continue that relationship. I don't want you with me in public in case that woman decides to approach you. And you constantly cautioning her about her character. And in so many words, she tells you, I'm never going to change. Then you have to be the bigger person and leave the relationship.
Around her, let her know that you're not pleased with what she's doing and you don't approve of it. And let her know that you're going to stay from around her because you don't approve of what she's doing.
Well,
and I think it should be a one-on-one situation that way.
That's easier said than done, Mrs. Harvey. Flesh and blood has a tendency to wear on you, and it's hard to separate long-time childhood friendships and the fact that you are flesh and blood and you share the same lineage of family, your kit and kin. It can sometimes weigh on you to the point where I've seen family members that drive by those people's house, and because they feel so guilty that they can't connect with them, they drive by and leave a bundle of money and say, I still love you, but I have to love you at a distance, and I love you with the love of the Lord. And they stick their hand out as if they're sticking out the long-handled spoon, saying, I can't be with you, but that doesn't say I can't help take care of you. Now, can money really be the solution to spending time with an old-time childhood friend who you no longer have anything in common with? Can that be the solution, or can that set a problem at hand that can be dangerous?
I think that you make her think that you can buy her, pay her, but that's wrong. That should never be done that way. If this woman attitude, personality is not, and you're not agreeing with what she's doing, how she's treating you, the best thing you can do is stay away from her.
Well, you're right, Mrs. Harvey. You're absolutely right. You must distance yourself against the person. Now, we're going to end our segment here today, but we will be back at you tomorrow to talk more, Friday, talk more with you about always sisters, always friends. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We're going right into marriage and family life. And if you haven't joined us in the past, you certainly want to be a part of this segment to talk about families. Our previous topic was on developing family reunions. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. Rosa Parks will greet
Rosa
you
Parks.
Next.
This is for the Pullman Porters, who organized when people said they couldn't, and carried the Pittsburgh Courier and the Chicago Defender to the black Americans in the South so that they would know they were not alone. This is for the Pullman Porters, who helped Thurgood Marshall go south and come back north to fight the fight that resulted in Brown versus Board of Education. Because even though Kansas is west, and even though Topeka is the birthplace of Gwendolyn Brooks, who wrote The Power for the Chicago Defender Sends a Man to Little Rock, it was the Pullman Porters who whispered to the traveling men, both the blues men and the race men, so that they would both know what was going on. This is for the Pullman Porters who smiled as if they were happy and laughed like they were tickled when some folk were around, and who silently rejoiced in 1954 when the Supreme Court announced its 9-0 decision that separate is inherently unequal. This is for the Pullman Porters who smiled and welcomed a 14-year-old boy onto their train in 1955. They noticed his slight limp that he tried to disguise with a doo-wop walk. They noticed his stutter and probably understood why his mother wanted him out of Chicago during the summer when school was out. 14-year-old black boys with limps and stutters are apt to try to prove themselves in dangerous ways when mothers aren't around to look after them. So this is for the Pullman Porters who looked over that 14-year-old while the train rolled the reverse of the Blues Highway from Chicago to St. Louis to Memphis to Mississippi. This is for the men who kept him safe. And if Emmett Till had been able to stay on that train all summer, he would have maybe grown a bit of a paunch, certainly lost his hair, probably have worn bifocals and bounced his grandchildren on his knee, telling them about his summer riding the rails. But he had to get off that train and ended up in Money, Mississippi, and was horribly, brutally, inexcusably, and unacceptably murdered. This is for the Pullman Porters who, when the sheriff was trying to get that body secretly buried, got Emmett's body on the northbound train, got his body home to Chicago, where his mother said, "I want the world to see what they did to my boy." And this is for all the mothers who cried. And this is for all the people who said, "Never again." And this is about Rosa Parks, whose feet were not so tired. It had been, after all, an ordinary day, until the bus driver gave her the opportunity to make history. This is about Mrs. Rosa Parks from Tuskegee, Alabama, who was also the field secretary of the NAACP. This is about the moment Rosa Parks shouldered her cross, put her worldly goods aside, and was willing to sacrifice her life so that that young man in Money, Mississippi, who had been so well protected by the Pullman Porters, would not have died in vain. When Mrs. Parks said no, a passionate movement was begun. No longer would there be a reliance on the law. There was a higher law. When Mrs. Parks brought that light of hers to expose the evil of the system, the sun came and rested on her shoulders, bringing the heat and light of truth. Others would follow Mrs. Parks. Poor young men in Greensboro, North Carolina, would also say no. Great voices would be raised, singing the praises of God and exhorting us to forgive those who trespass against us. But it was the Pullman Porters who safely got Emmett to his granduncle, and it was Mrs. Rosa Parks who could not stand that death. And in not being able to stand it, she sat back down.
Ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. And Nikki describes the Porter men's situation very well. I want you to listen next time very closely to what transpired. We've covered a bit of our family issues as we talked about family members that we've had some controversy with. So for the benefit of time, we are going to readdress that on Friday with our family life. We're going to go right into health and wellness and dealing with our wellness of using juicing and how beneficial can juicing be. Now, we do have Dr. Harvey on the line, and we're going to pose a question to Dr. Harvey about utilizing natural juices and what it could do for the body, and can you sustain yourself for several weeks on natural juicing? Here you have it, Dr. Jamel Harvey.
Greetings.
Dr. Jamel, greetings.
Greetings.
How are you this evening?
I'm good.
Dr. Jamel, can you tell us a little bit about the benefits of juicing and how we can get our amino acids from juicing? And should we use protein powders of any sort?
Well, starting off, you've had vegetarians on the planet, and you have liquefied people that once lived. So with that backdrop, yes. Juicing, provided you do have organic, pure plants and substance that you are juicing. You have to make sure it's organic. You have to make sure that that you are juicing is pure, okay, as much as possible. Juicing, what they call aqueous state liquids, will penetrate your tissues and get into your blood system much quicker, and it's digestible better than a pill form or any type of other concoction other than a liquid form. You're basically talking about a liquid form that's absorbed easily into the body, and it penetrates the brain-blood barrier quicker than, let's say, a pill. Okay, that's the reason for juicing. It takes the natural extract, the potency, the power of a plant or a vegetable, and it gets it right into your system right away. That is the main benefit of juicing, is that you don't have to go through a lot of time waiting for a pill or even waiting for food that you just eat to break down. It's already in a liquid state. It's already in a enzymatic base which is delivered into your bloodstream, and your tissues can absorb it quicker. So, yes, juicing is the way to go. But, again, make sure you have organic types of vegetables, the right types of fruit.
Yes, Jamel, I wanted to know, you said something that was very important. You said something about the brain barrier. What are we talking about? Preceding the brain, being able to advance to the brain without having the brain be a blockage of some sort? Can you explain that to our listening audience?
Wait. You can get your blood and what's in a mineral.
Okay, Jamel, excuse me. I think our system was sticking a bit. Can you repeat that again?
Well, the brain runs the body. It's a computer for the body. So the brain will let the body know when it has received a nutrient and put that nutrient where it's supposed to be. So when you have a substance that's able to get into the synapses of the brain for to be cataloged and to be sent to that part of the body, that's what you're calling the brain, blood-brain barrier. Brain, the blood sends it throughout the body, through the heart, through the brain. Your brain records it, and then it triggers the nutrients to go where they need to go. So crossing the blood-brain barrier is very important in everything you take and everything that you eat. You can link that to absorption. How does the body digest and absorb? When it digests and absorbs, that means it's into the blood. When it's into the blood, that means it's registered by the heart and the brain. All right?
I see. Now, if you bear with me here, one of the questions I wanted to ask, for your formula and your recipe, can you mix fruit with juices? And what are the benefits of using the organic opposed to the fertilized vegetables?
Fruits and juices. What do you mean by that? You mean fruits and vegetables?
Yes.
And by itself, and then deal with vegetables the next day. You have to realize that fruits and vegetables, one is medicine and one is food, okay? It depends on your state, your condition, if you're diseased, if you have a situation that needs to be addressed. Organically means that free of pesticides, and it's grown in its natural state, and it's grown with hopefully natural seed that came from the very plant that it is, okay, other than a synthetic genetically altered seed. Organic means that it is from a particular tree, plant, and the seed, you're using the natural seed, not a synthetically or a genetically altered seed. Thus, you have organic, meaning something that is natural, something that comes from the plant or the tree that it it derives from. Okay, so when you partake of that substance, now you're dealing with natural enzymes, because what happens with genetically altered material, there are certain enzyme elements that are missing because man does not know the full calibration of nature. He is trying, but he will never find the full calibration of nature. What he has is a synthetic. That's why they call it synthetic, because it's missing some elements. Nature has everything in a perfect balance. Man has not perfected his own self first. Man has not perfected his consciousness, so how dare he think that he can perfect the plants and the food for our nutriment, for our upkeeping. So in order to do that, man, those involved in genetically altering, they have to first perfect themselves. Now you're dealing with a spiritual, physical situation here. So those that are in charge of that, you need to listen up. How do you dare think that you're going to perfect that which the Most High has put here when you can't even perfect your own human being? Are you your brother's keeper? Do you do unto others as you do unto yourself? So this conversation can go to a lot of different areas, but to be more specific to answer your question, organic is good if you can find it. And if you find organic fruits and organic vegetables, you want to make sure that you deal with fruit for the special reason that you need to deal with fruit. You deal with vegetables for the reason you need to deal with vegetables, or herbs for that matter. Everyone's body vibrates on a different frequency. You have to find your calibration and your frequency and match that particular fruit, vegetable, or herb for your particular situation. That's where a skilled naturopathic practitioner comes in. Okay, so it's not just a blanket statement that we can say, oh yeah, don't mix fruits and vegetables together. No, there's a combination of things that has to be mixed together. There's knowledge into this that has to be known, and you don't find this in your med schools.
Thank you. Dr. Jamil, I have a question. Now, it seems as if we have a great problem with a number of different deficiencies, and one of them happened to be trace mineral deficiency. A large number of our diseases are developing from a lack of trace minerals, and we can't seem to get enough of them in our diet because our topsoil is being destroyed. So therefore, we are producing vegetables and fruits that are minerals depleted. How can we, as we develop our organic gardens, make sure that we are inserting those minerals back into our fertilized substance that we're growing? Can you actually induce the minerals by adding a substance so that the topsoil will continue to grow? Is that possible?
Oh, twofold. Find the best quality is possible. Secondly, deal with real seeds, not genetically altered seeds. Stay away from the Monsanto seeds, okay? Try to find organic seeds that are produced by people with the consciousness of organically produced products, not those who are of the economic value added, capitalistic, I'm going to plant a crop for a profit. There are those that are putting out products, crops, and seed for the benefit of human beings and not for its economical value. That's what you have to search, and that's what's happening to the planet today. Okay, this thing is more than just discussing the health. The health, your health is your wealth, and your health is your spirit. The spirit that's in your body is maintained by the physical body. So those who would like to put genetically altered material on human beings, woe unto them. You are reaching a point on the planet when nature is beginning to speak to people through various different ways, and people are forming a bond with nature. In that conversation, if you eat in accordance with that which is your body speaks to you, you will be balanced and you will be healed. but you have to be able to listen to your body. You can't listen to your body if you're clogged up with macaroni and cheese and nothing to break down the macaroni and cheese. There has to be an enzyme balance to help break down carbohydrates, to help break down protein. Without that, now your brain can't get the sufficient neural synapses ability to take in information and to respond. It slows your system down. So periodic fasting with juices is good. Water fast during the day is good. Certain fruits, a fast of that during the day is good. Food, this type of food that's being produced right now basically will kill you. Food, unbalanced, genetically altered food over a long period of time will kill you. Food will kill. Nutrition helps you. Nutrition and herbs will help to maintain and balance the body.
Well, on that note, we want to say thank you to Jamel, Dr. Harvey, and ask that we will have you back on Friday. And I want you to understand, people, that our health is our wealth, and without good, functioning, able, mechanical bodies, because we're nothing but atoms, we have to understand that we cannot advance ourselves without that. So stay tuned. We'll see you again on Friday. And I'm going to do my disappearing act, and I'm going to ask Cal to take me out of here. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen.
It's DA. It's DA. It's DA.
Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you next time. Thank
you. Oh, yeah. About to close, so tell me what's gonna happen. Am I going with you? How you coming with me? My girl's not around, and your man just set you free. Baby, I'm your destination.
Baby girl, I can do magic. I'll make the disappear. Girl, let's get up out of here. See the light.
and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us on this ride. We'll see you again on Friday, and we want you to remember that a segment under attorney at law is going to be a force to reckon with. This time, we're going to set that into motion so you will be able to call in and find your attorneys and pro bono and low-cost attorneys right here in the Care to Read room. We want to assist you. We do not want you to be without representation. And it is not our desire that you be a pro se lawyer, but to have low-cost lawyers to assist you. And it's my desire that every household be covered with assistance. And if you are out there and you're not covered and you're going through something, call me. I want to help you. I want to reconnect you to those attorneys that are willing and standing by to help you. So stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. You are not alone in this. We are family. And when blood calls, blood answers. I say, oh, double and baba boo to you, y'all. And if it be inshallah, we will see you on Friday, ready to kick it up here in the Care to Read room. We want to thank Dr. Jamel and Mrs. Harvey for their support and our tribal effect here as we function like a tribe, the Omi Inca 7 Tribe. Stay tuned. We are bringing the tribe to you in a village concept. I hope you're ready for it. Oh, double!